Saturday afternoon, 312-981-7200 is our phone number. That's how you can call and reach us about anything in the legal world. That's what we do a lot with Mike Leonard, Leonard Trial Lawyers. How you doing, Mike? Oh, I didn't turn on your mic. I turned on the wrong mic. Go ahead, my friend.
I thought you were trying to you know, squeeze me out there.
Yeah, no.
It would be the John Hansen Alone Show.
No, I just pulled a Hochberg and put on the wrong microphone. Yeah. So
very happy to be here, John. Coming off a spring break with a couple of the kids. So I'm kind of, you know, in a zen land, I guess, you know.
Yeah, well, it was well earned. And actually, well, first, before we get into some cases that have resolved recently, you always have questions for me. So fire,
John,
in it, fire
I
away.
Think all the listeners really want to know, and I've been getting bombarded, but they want to know, how does John Hansen rank his top three or four Easter candies? And we're hoping some people will come in on a text line and give their own.
Mm.
So, and there's certain ones I just wouldn't allow in my basket.
Okay, so here's the thing is I don't generally like the major Easter candies. I'm not a jelly bean fan.
Oh, I love jelly beans.
Well, so I like some jelly bean flavors, but I don't like the variety of them because there's a lot of goofy ones in there, right?
Well, it depends what you're buying. Like you want to go traditional Brock's, the big ones, you
okay.
know, but they're hard to find sometimes. Yeah, I don't like the specialty,
right.
The specialty ones or the little ones. I just like the traditional jewel ones that kind of look like they're made out of wax,
right?
But they're large.
But if it was like red, green, purple, I'd be fine with that, with just traditional flavors. But then I take one that looks like it's going to be orange, and it's like pumpkin pie, and I'm like, oh, gosh.
I think you're shopping at the wrong store, John.
Probably.
You need to go back to Jewel, the traditional places. Stop shopping out the high-end places out in Downers Grove.
Oh,
okay?
That's what that says, yeah. I'm not a Peeps hater like a lot of people are, but I'm not a Peeps lover. I'm just fine with it.
Yeah, I don't really hate them. I used to like them as a kid. I think I'm kind of anti-Peeps now. I can eat one. I have to eat one a year, I think.
Yeah.
I just don't like the, you know, and then they get crusty and a little stale in your basket.
But for me, if I'm looking at a basket of candy, I'm not wasting the calories on a Peeps.
True.
Right.
That's a good call. Yeah.
The egg one, I forget what they're called, where they're stuffed with cream in the middle and they had those commercials for years of the bunnies.
The Cadbury?
Yeah.
Those
are good.
Yeah.
And
those are expensive. It's a high-end candy, John.
Right. Yeah. that's the kind of guy I am.
I'm going number one, you know, it's like the shape, allegedly the shape of an egg. The chocolate on the outside, and then it's got the marshmallow inside.
Okay, that's my
number one.
All right.
I'm going to go jelly beans two, and I'm probably going to go malted milk balls three. Mm. What's have your ranking, John?
I don't know. I'll just do the eggs with the cream filling, number one. Just give me a chocolate bunny that I can just eat the ears off first and work my way around.
You want to do a solid bunny or like hollow in the middle?
Hollow in the middle.
Okay.
Right. Exactly. Frozen.
Because the solid one is more of a meal.
But, yeah. No.
You know, that's like 5,000 calories.
Yeah. No, I like the hollow one. And then, yeah, because like Skittles wouldn't count as Easter candy.
Skittles is too
that's
recent.
That's Halloween.
It's too recent also, yeah.
I'll do the malt balls one, the one that kind of melts.
Oh, malt balls?
Yeah.
Love them.
I'll do that number three.
Yeah, okay. Hopefully we'll get some input on the text line, too.
Yeah, I don't know if we will, Mike, but 312-981.
It's one of those topics that's not that exciting to the average person, I guess, John.
Well, you know, people are just so legal-minded when they listen to this program.
Yeah, yeah.
They're looking for high-end conversation.
It's more of a highbrow show with you, especially in the driver's seat. That is for sure, John.
312-981-7200. Any legal questions you have or any candy thoughts you have ahead of the Easter holiday tomorrow? 630 wants to know, is there a benefit to working with a Social Security disability attorney when applying for disability benefits, particularly for rare diseases, as some that aren't as well understood? Mike, I don't know if any of that, it might be a Patrick Dolan question.
Interesting enough, going back to my law school days, we had a legal clinic at Loyola.
Okay.
And we got to get our feet wet, so to speak, and handle SSI cases for individuals.
Wow.
Which was pretty fun at the time. You know, it's like doing real law work. They'd have administrative hearings. You'd develop, there'd be a huge record sometimes of the person's history. And then you'd go to the hearing and put the case on, try to get the person benefits. That's the last time I did it, John. But I would say there's obviously can be a huge benefit to have an attorney involved. It's not area of law I do at all anymore. But clearly, even just consulting with somebody first and then making the decision whether to retain them or not would be a good call in my view, because there's a lot of procedural issues. There's a lot of issues just about how you present the evidence.
And disability benefits can net you a lot of money. And I say net you, I mean you've earned it if you're able to
Yeah,
work.
You need it, and it's important to. If you don't win initially, obviously you have a bunch of appeal rights, but you want to put your best foot forward. So other than saying absolutely yes, I think you should consult with somebody and obviously be aware of the costs when you do that too.
Do you recommend people talking to multiple lawyers from different firms as they're trying to like figure out what to do just for comparing the styles, the finances, everything?
Yes, unless the case involves me potentially, then I don't want them to talk to anybody else.
Right.
No, I mean, I think it's very common for people to talk to multiple lawyers because, I mean, there's a lot of reasons for it. Number one, you can kind of get a take on the lawyer. And you have to have a level of trust, you know, and you have to feel good about who you hire. So I tell the people all the time, and I basically say, I know you're going to talk to multiple people. You know, here's why we're good at what we do. You know, it's a relationship of trust. You have to feel that this person is really going to fight for you, that they're their best at what they do. And you know people are going to talk to multiple lawyers. It's just a reality.
Right.
But it's a good idea because you get a very different sense from talking to multiple lawyers, kind of their style,
yeah,
their approach,
your vibe
are they talking money right away? You know, what's their strategy for a case in general? Kind of what's their track record? What's their reputation? What's their approach? So I think it's really valuable.
All right, 630. So I would say, yeah, why not talk to a Social Security disability attorney, maybe one or two of them or three of them, and kind of get a vibe for it and fight for what you think you deserve. And I think that's fair.
Yeah.
312-981-7200. We are going to take a quick break. Then we're going to get Kathy's favorite Easter candy. And then Jason's got a legal question. So
all right.
There we go.
We're going to put the candy first, right?
For sure. Okay. Grab bag after this on WGN. And Mike Leonard, Letter Trial Lawyers. Put on those headphones, Mike.
I got them, John. I'm ready to go, baby.
All right. Can you hear me?
Yes.
All right. Very good. That's good. Oh, you broke them again on the right side. Iridian will help you out at some point. You can hear me, though, right?
I can hear you, but okay. I'm not sure if it's through the headphones or you're just loud, John.
Okay. Wow. On that note, we'll get to Jason and Shelley in a moment. Kathy, though, has got her favorite Easter candy. Kathy, what do you got for us?
Well, in trying to make it a little legal, I'll just ask, is it legal for me to tell you that I prefer the dark chocolate Fannie Mae raspberry cream?
Oh, that egg is very tasty. Yeah. That's a high-end candy, though, right?
They used to be bigger. They used to be bigger, but that was the staple at our house for Easter.
Ooh.
I mean, my mother actually would make a meal of those. I mean, she would sit, and I think she saved, you know, being the Easter bunny, you know, well, the Easter bunny must have saved some out for her.
Ah.
But she would cut them in quarters, the four different flavors that those cream eggs came in, and she'd have a taste of each. And I caught her once eating with a fork and knife. Like
wow.
It was a meal.
Like George Costanza.
That is a dedicated
bar, yeah.
Easter candy person. I would have no discipline.
They were so good.
There's no way to have the discipline to cut it into pieces. I would just eat the entire thing.
Yeah.
What's your take on jelly beans?
Love jelly beans.
Yeah, okay. We had some concerning testimony from John Hansen earlier on jelly beans. So just want to hear what you have to say.
I separate them out because those flavors can get murky.
Thank you,
so,
Kathy.
Like, I have this little plate that I do my jelly beans on, and I sort them in colors all around, and then I kind of eat them by color.
You got a whole system.
Interesting. That's kind of I think I'm going to try that. I'm going to give that a try.
All right, Kathy.
Really good.
I got to get to some legal questions, but thank you for calling, Kathy.
Thank you very much.
Bye.
All right, we're going to do a headphone swap out. 312-981-7200. Now we don't have broken headphones. Mike, can you hear me now? There we go.
I think I can, John.
All right, let's go to the phone lines here. Let's go to Jason first. Jason's got an interesting question. Hey, Jason.
Hey, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call this time. I got a question. Is there such a thing in a state when somebody passes away as a caretaker's cut? Had a family member pass away, I was her caretaker. As far as I'm concerned, did everything for somebody who was homebound for the last several years of her life. So am I entitled to any portion of the estate under something called a caretaker's cut?
Interesting.
Here's the great thing about the show is we get to opine on things that we don't know anything about. But in general, absolutely not. You'd have to be, you know, there'd have to be some reason.
It'd have to be written
in,
yeah,
right? You'd have to be designated to get that cut. You wouldn't get that because of your service. So, no, there's no general entitlement to that. But if they put you in the will or otherwise, you know, denoted the fact that you're supposed to get X amount of money, yes. But despite your a diligent service, there'd be no legal entitlement to get money just because of your service.
And like in a trust, you name an executor, that can be a paid position if it's written in there. But Jason, we are opining here. I do have someone that would absolutely know the answer to that question. That's John Heggie from Heggie Walkner Law Firm. He comes on and does estate planning stuff all the time. And Jason, is this something that you actually did? Are you curious about if you can get this money?
I am. It sounds like it's not going to work out how I wish it would have.
I want you to talk to John. Do you have a pen and paper near you?
Yes.
Okay. Not that Mike Leonard isn't great opining, but let's get an estate planning lawyer to actually look into this for you, Jason. His name is John Heggie. The last name is H-E-G-G-I-E. And their phone number is 847-272-7360. You got that?
Thank you very much.
Call him on Monday or Tuesday. Let him know that you're listening to GN. He comes on the show a lot. He's coming on again soon. But we'll get you an answer, Jason, okay?
Thank you. Happy Easter.
Yeah, thanks for calling.
Let's go to Shelly. Not to turn you off, Mike, that you didn't know the answer.
Well, I was kind of consistent with what I said. You should talk to multiple attorneys, probably one of them who should practice in that area,
yes,
right?
Probably.
That'd be a good idea.
All right, Shelly, go ahead.
Hi. Two different areas. One, the law, and two, candy. once upon a time, I was a lawyer for over a quarter century.
All right.
And I would say, having also become disabled and having had to deal with SSDI, but your guest who referenced SSI, if he meant it as a limitation, people should know there's both SSI for those who didn't actually earn disability and SSDI for those who did, and it's usually substantially higher. And the fees back a decade ago, and I believe still now, were capped. Back then it was $6,000, so it was extremely cost-effective to hire someone. There was no way I could deal with it. I failed at the first two levels, but hired someone for the appeal, and in an utterly unexpected turn, the hearing was supposed to be on a Monday. On Friday, we were notified that I was awarded the disability without even the hearing, and there were only like 2,000 people in the country that year.
Oh, wow. That's fantastic.
So you would say...
It is because there was a big set of problems, but people should know that it's quite likely that it's a capped fee, so they shouldn't be afraid at all of investigating it.
Oh, that's awesome. And that's kind of what we said, too, to talk to a lawyer about it. And the 630 says, thank you. And I appreciate that expertise, Shelly. So, you, again, just to recap, you'd recommend getting someone, a lawyer who does this stuff.
Yes, and you can get it earlier than I did. Hmm. You can get them, and they'll start earlier stages than mine, which was the ultimate appeal, not through Social Security the first time, not through the appeal to Social Security the first on the second level, but with the actual appeal through an administrative law judge.
Look at that.
And Shelly, what was your area of expertise or practice when you were a lawyer?
I did an awful lot of things, but the last decade was condo and homeowners association law in court now. So chancery and non-chancery, whatever.
Yeah, very, very contentious type proceedings.
Yeah.
Can be. Secondly, on your opinion with respect to a caretaker's fee, if they had negotiated one while the person was alive, yes. If the person didn't have the mental capacity, but there was a guardian, the guardian could have negotiated with the fellow who wants money now. But the person having a past with no agreement in place that they should have been paid on an ongoing basis, no. Be aware. Yes, he should talk to whomever he wants,
right,
including Mr. Heggie, but he shouldn't get his hopes up, because unless it's in the will or a trust now, I'm going to agree with your guess that the answer is no, don't think so.
I love that. And so we were kind of right, but the second opinion always helps. And then
I just thought I would endorse what you were saying.
I love it.
So people know. And third, candy. Sold candy as an undergrad. Managed a candy, fruit, and nut store between undergrad and going to grad school and law school. And have been eating it for over half a century.
All right.
Cadbury cream eggs, which unfortunately have shrunk. If you ever open one, it's hysterical because you got the chocolate outside, then you're swimming in white, but in the center is yellow because you have a yolk inside the white of an egg.
Yep.
Right.
So yep.
It's pretty cool. Jelly beans versus jelly bellies. Jelly beans are very waxy, and you'll notice, I believe it's carnauba wax is one of their ingredients. I hate the green and yellow and have decided I don't need the calories, so I tend to throw them out or give them to my mother.
Wow.
The rest of the candies are fine. Yeah, my mom's 91 and she loves candy. And Jelly Bellies, in 1978, the candy store I was at, which was run by a little old man and a little old lady who were probably younger than I am now, they sold the red ones. It was brand new, the very cherry, as opposed to the millions of flavors. But I had had a high school English teacher whose husband worked at Golitz up in, I think it's North Chicago at the time. So he made them. And they had all those wonderful flavors, as you're all referencing. But back in the beginning, as I said, we sold only the cherry. I loved the ice blue mint, which unfortunately over time I think morphed into raspberry or something, which is fine, but I miss ice blue mint. And if you mixed ice blue mint and cream soda, awesome.
Shelly, so,
wow, all right. You're a connoisseur.
Yeah.
Candy is great. And solid chocolate on my standpoint. And
at some point, I think I got to pay you for being a guest on this program, Shelly. You've given us so much information. We're up against the news. You got 20 seconds.
About the sugar eggs.
Yeah.
Have you seen? And, you know, you look inside and there's a vignette. It's kind of weird to eat them, but they're just pure sugar, so there's no problem eating them. But they're beautiful in a basket also.
All right.
All right.
Shelly,
thank you for your expertise. And it was a very sweet call.
It was. I also love how she's giving it to her mom, who's 91. And at 91, you should be able to just eat, well, basically anything
whatever.
You want. But
yeah,
sugar,
whatever.
Certainly. You've earned it. 312-981-7200. Ann's got a question. We'll get to Ann after the news and all your other questions. Mike, before we let we go to the break for the news, what's your number? How can people reach you?
312-380-6559, LeonardTrialLawyers.com.
Phone number one more time. Slower. 312-380-6559. More with Mike Leonard and your calls after this on WGN. A few more minutes here left with Mike Leonard, Leonard Trial Lawyers. And you ready for a couple more calls, Mike?
Let's do it, John.
These are law questions or comments about Easter candy?
Well, each listener should be required to address candy first.
Well,
come on, John.
I don't want to slow up the show with everyone talking about jelly beans.
But it's fun.
I'm going to go to Abigail first. Hey, Abigail, how are you doing today?
Put it outside.
Abigail?
Oh, hi.
You're on the radio. Who are you telling to go outside?
No, I'm just getting back from the grocery store, and my son goes, something I was carrying in was dripping all over the floor.
Okay.
All right, Abigail, what's your question?
Question is, how difficult would it be to take a city to court? The issue we have is...
And don't say the city's name or anything for legal reasons. Just
I won't.
Okay,
I won't,
thanks,
I
Abigail.
Won't. Yeah. Our house was built in about 1970. We purchased it in 1985.
Mm-hmm.
A couple years later, we found out there were no property disclosures at the time. But we found out that the house was built in unstable soil, and it was supposed to originally have been a park.
Okay.
We've gone to the city. We went into their archives. We found that the street was never even supposed to have been there. It was designated as a park. Instead, they built homes and put the park on a busy street. But we're into our fourth driveway because... it keeps on sinking.
Wow. So you're wondering can you sue the municipality for either what, zoning it incorrectly, or they shouldn't have had it even be available for purchase, and you're looking for them to maybe at least cover the costs of having to do this driveway all the time?
Well, that would be nice. And then our back deck that is supposed to be ground level is sitting on floor jacks 3 feet off the ground.
Okay.
About 12, 15 years ago, one of the aldermen, when we went before the council, had suggested that the city buy the house.
Oh, okay, because you've been having so many problems.
Correct. And then...
Well, tell
everything
you...
Everything was...
Go ahead.
Yes. Well, everything was going well, except for one of the aldermen needed work on his house due to a creek, and we got bumped out.
Oh, okay. Well, that seems shady, but so hold on. I'm going to put you on. So here's the thing, Abigail. When I got your call, and Ann, who we're going to get to next as well, they are both kind of real estate questions, and Dave Schluter was kind enough to call on in to answer these as well. But Mike, I'm going to give you a first shot. Are you able to sue the city because they basically zoned a house wrong? It was supposed to be a park. And the driveway keeps on getting messed up. Your thoughts, Mike?
Well, we get to have me answer, and then Dave give the right answer. But right. I would say the biggest problem with her potential claim would be statute of limitations. It sounds like they were aware of these issues for years. So even if they had some sort of negligence claim that they wanted to bring in court, it would probably be barred by any applicable statute of limitations because they've known about these issues for so long. Now, let's hear what Dave has to say on that.
All right, I got
to
catch Dave up because he joined halfway through the call. Hey, Dave Schluter, how are you, my friend?
Don't worry. Thank you so much. Yeah, there's a concept for municipalities across the board, which protects them all, because they would never exist if they had liability for these mishaps, called tort immunity. And so, for example, if somebody is working at the city and they break your window because their hammerhead falls off and goes into your window, they're immune for general negligence. And so something like faulty work or anything like that, and you could even say the certifying of the work being improper, in my opinion, would be not at the level of what they call recklessness or gross negligence. For example, a fire truck deciding to go through a school zone in reverse during recess. You know, it's got to be quite a standard before the municipalities are brought in for liability.
One thing
it's hard. It's hard to ever get paid on those.
Well, Dave, so Abigail's concern was is that she bought a house that, and Abigail, can you just in 10 seconds explain exactly what the problem is again? What happened?
The house is built on substandard soil, and they were replacing our driveway for the fourth time since 1985.
And you think that the municipality knew about it, and they originally designated it as a park because of the soil?
Oh, yeah, they did know about it.
Dave, knowing that, Dave, what do you think?
Was she her own builder, John? Did she build it, or did she have a general contractor?
Abigail?
We were not the original owners, or are not the original owners. It was built by a track builder.
Yeah, they might have had something once it went from the track builder. They could have maybe had liability if they sold something without what's called a soil boring test. All property, you can have 20 houses on a block and then have a vacant lot right in the middle. And the reason is somebody 30 years ago did a soil test and found out that that particular lot can't sustain concrete. It can be silt, it can be a former dump or something. The action, I would think, in my opinion, wouldn't be the city, but maybe the first buyer. But again, same thing that the last person mentioned about statute of limitations. It's a sad situation. They usually don't get insurance coverage either because it's not a calamity. For example, a tree falling in a house or something like that, it's a long-term problem. So you probably already tried anyway through your insurance and probably lost out. I'm just speculating. But, yeah, I think it's just one of those. It's just an unfortunately bad investment that you didn't know was bad. But it's something that I don't think that it's a stretch to say the city of Chicago is responsible.
Right. And we didn't say Chicago for sure, but for the record. No. But either way.
Whatever the city is, yeah, I think it's a tough. I think that it would be, if a lawyer was ever consulted, the problem you could have is when you bring something that doesn't have a legal foundation, then you can sometimes be ordered to pay that municipality's defense costs, and those lawyers aren't cheap. So it is a sad situation, but yeah, I think it's not, the pocket is long gone, I think, but the city, I don't think that even a bad soil test would not, absent some forgery where they altered or did something reckless or gross, I don't think the municipality is going to be on the hook, because they can't exist. If people knew the ordinary bad move or judgment calls that are made every day in municipalities, if that was open to litigation, it would never end. Everybody's taxes would just end up going up, and it would just never end. So years ago, long Illinois, and well, actually a law school principle is the concept of tort. T-O-R-T immunity, and that's really what governs this question.
Right. Dave, what is your phone number, by the way, in case Abigail want to follow up?
Yeah, I've been helping people for 38 years. I'm also the attorney for Home Sweet Home Chicago, which we love. I'll be on in a couple weeks, and I'll be down there, John. It's 630-285-5300, 630-285-5300. I hope everybody has a great holiday.
I'm not letting you go, Dave. I got another question for you. Can you stay on?
Oh, God bless America. Go ahead. Yeah.
And by the way, I want to introduce you to Mike Leonard, the other voice you're hearing. He's a federal defense attorney. You guys may have met in passing.
Hey, Dave. How are you?
Yeah, well, hopefully, as long as the coffee was on over there, yeah, we might have met.
Exactly. We like to take all these questions and try and answer them our best and then get people like you on the line when we can for specifics. I'm going to go to Ann next. Ann, what is your issue that we can help walk through?
Okay, so can you hear me okay?
We can, Ann. Go ahead.
So now, say I move into a new home, and the new home, we have an electrical fire, and it's been investigated the electrical fire was caused by a prior owner who had done some do-it-yourself electrical work without permitting it from the city or from either having it done by a licensed electrician, can we hold that that prior owner liable for the fire?
Dave?
Go ahead, my friend. I'll answer second.
You want to ask Mike first? All right, Mike, what's your guess?
Okay, so my guess, my law school exam would be you could potentially have a negligence claim against either the prior owner or the person who did the work. That would be my argument.
What's the answer when you think
of it? Yeah, well, I first would start with insurance because any kind of fire, they can subrogate against whoever might be responsible. Did you guys make an insurance claim?
Yes, it was. That happens to be a neighbor, but it was the insurance. This is definitely an insurance claim because it was extensive work that needs to be done. They'll be out of the home for a year.
Wow. Right. But, I mean, did the claim, was it successful? Did it take care of everything?
From what I understand, yes. They moved ahead with cleaning out the place and getting it ready for a renovation. And
they probably, a judge, if the insurance is going to take care of the whole thing, it would be up to that insurance company to do the digging. It's called subrogation, and that would be whether there was still enough time. Do you know if it was the bad work done more than 2 years ago?
It would have been about 3 years ago.
Yeah, the negligence statutes, even for that insurance company, would be 2 years. But I think I'm not minimizing their anger and minimizing the frustration, but if in fact insurance is taking care of everything, they'd end up paying their deductible. But on a loss that large, they should be very grateful they've got a carrier that's taking care of it. And it'll be up to that carrier's lawyers to chase whoever the bad person was.
So it's not an individual homeowner trying to get some sort of damages. The insurance company takes care of it on their own.
Oh, yeah. It's very fortunate they have it. And so it'd be in a rock and a hard place. That's what we always tell people when you're shopping insurance at real estate closings. Probably told you, John, the same thing.
Yep.
Never let it lapse even one day. It's like, let's say today somebody's insurance is up and they're starting Monday with a new company. Maybe they got a better deal. If the tragedy happens while that insurance is lapsed, it's a huge problem because there's not enough money usually to pay your mortgage off if you have a big loss like that. So the big word to everyone else who's never met me today is, if you're switching insurance, which is pretty common now at the internet, make sure it's seamless, or even if it's doubled up for a day,
that's okay.
Never let it gap. Never let it skip. Mm-hmm.
Mike, did you have a thought?
I have no further thoughts, John.
Okay. Anne, thanks for the call.
Yeah, and just a note, it's a note to people who do do-it-yourself work to make sure that it's that you at least get a permit so that it's evaluated for safety.
Yeah, talk to any of the people that are on Home Sweet Home Chicago to get it done right, and that includes Dave Schluter as well, who helped.
Yeah, it's never worth it. The guy who says the wink, wink, it's $28,000 without a permit and $30,000 with a permit. You pay the extra money.
Yeah, for sure. Dave, what's your number again one more time for people?
Yeah, no problem. I really appreciate it, John. 630-285-5300. Again, wishing everybody a great holiday.
Thanks for calling last second, Dave.
Okay, no problem. Bye-bye.
He's a smart guy, Mike Leonard.
He is.
He knows his stuff. We got to take a break. We'll wrap things up. I want to follow up on the case that you essentially had settled or thrown out.
Thrown out.
Involving Eddie Johnson, a name a lot of us know here. WGM Mike Leonard, Leonard Trial Lawyers. Got a good question on the text line about the Supreme Court, but before we get there, you texted me, it was like maybe the Wednesday before last. You were about to go on vacation, well-earned, and you had a kind of a rare ruling in your favor that never even found its way to court regarding the Eddie Johnson case, right?
Well, the case was in court. So as you recall, in federal court, someone who worked for Eddie Johnson filed a lawsuit against him.
Chicago police superintendent.
He was the Chicago police superintendent, had a great run, and then famously fired by Mayor Lightfoot. But in any event, one of his former employees who worked with him on his detail brought a sexual harassment case against him in federal court here in Chicago. That was filed about 2 years ago.
Why would that go in federal court? Just curious.
There's something called Title VII, which deals with sexual harassment, discrimination, things of that nature.
So it was a federal violation alleged.
Yeah, so it's common you could take a sexual harassment case, you could take it to state court, you could take it to federal court. Illinois has essentially the same laws as the federal level like exact same, almost, you know, same, you know, you just choose your jurisdiction, so to speak. So that case was brought in federal court about 2 years ago. We took extensive depositions. And of course, in a sexual harassment case, the big issue is it consensual? Okay. And as we discussed on the show at the beginning of that case, Eddie Johnson always owned up to the fact that he had a consensual relationship with the plaintiff in the case. And that went on for a couple years. And so in the depositions in that case, we established through the plaintiff's own testimony, things such as she repeatedly told him that she loved him. They went on trips together. They spent all sorts of time together. And so it's difficult if you're a plaintiff in a sexual harassment case to, on the one hand, say, I'm doing all these things with the other person. I'm traveling with them. I'm telling them I love them. But I really didn't mean it. I wanted him to believe that I loved him, but I really didn't. The problem is...
And this is a civil case, by the way.
Yeah, it's a civil case.
It's not criminal.
It's a civil case. So the problem with that... With that approach is that, you know, the way the court looks at it is what would a person in his shoes believe to be the case? So if someone's telling you they love you, if they're spending time with you, if they're traveling with you, if they're engaging in what appears to be a consensual relationship and giving you every indication that it is, then it's reasonable as a matter of law for you to believe that that's what's going on, right? So what happened, we took all those depositions and before the case was scheduled for trial, we filed what's called a motion for summary judgment, trying to get the case dismissed before trial. And in federal court, Judge Bucklow ruled in our favor and dismissed all of the claims that had been asserted against Eddie Johnson.
Is that rare in a summary judgment to get anything
well,
like that?
In federal court, in employment-related disputes, you know employers often do get a summary judgment in their favor. It happens more often than you would think. In sexual harassment cases, probably a little bit less because there's a lot of sort of he said, she said element to it. But what you're relying upon as the party moving for that is you're relying upon the testimony of the plaintiff, right? And so if the plaintiff is saying, hey, I was giving Eddie Johnson every reason to believe that he was in a consensual relationship with me, argument to the court was obviously he had every reason to believe that it was,
right,
and could assume that it was. And therefore, the court looked at it, I think did a great job, and ruled in his favor.
All right. Well, congrats to you on that. We got to wrap things up, unfortunately, Mike Leonard.
Can we do one more hour, John?
No, we
cannot.
Just
talk about candy and Easter food and ham and potatoes and stuff like that.
What's the phone number to reach you again, Mike?
I guess that's a no. 312-380-6559.